I'm Hank Stoltz, and this is the podcast for Clear Path Financial. And the opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. Individual tax matters should be discussed with your tax professional. So Ryan Kittredge, of course, is here in the beginning of the new year, our investments. And Ryan, as we take a look, I have to say the economy for 2024, pretty good. We were all worried about recession last January. Here we are, January 2025, and I think people are feeling pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of hard not to feel good with the potential no landing or soft landing or, you know, whatever they call it, which means that we don't get thrown into an economic downturn as a result of the interest rate hikes that we saw these, you know, past year and a half. Well, until recently, now they've started to lower them, right? So that kind of force can oftentimes, especially if coupled with sort of a slower growth and some other factors, can really dump into recession. But no, that's been not the case, certainly. And for most people out there, when you think of despite some just volatility in the past couple of weeks, stocks broadly are at or near all-time highs. People's real estate, their personal residences maybe haven't sort of increased at the same rate over the past few years, but they're still kind of right up there, right? We haven't seen the real estate downturn. So people are wealthier on average, and that in part can be sort of what continues to drive economic prosperity, because a lot of it comes down to consumer spending, Hank. And when you know, boy, look at my house, what it's worth and all this equity I have, and look at my 401k and all these things. You're like, sure, I can buy a new car next year, or it's easier to sort of justify. So we'll talk about, I guess, what goes into that. But yeah, overall, been a great year.
No, definitely. So if last year we were all kind of worried about it, and now we've been going through the year, as we went through 2024 and now into 2025, what are you seeing, Ryan? Are people more willing to take a chance? And I know that you're going to get into today really sort of some of where people put their money, what those asset classes are, and talk about those. But are people more willing to say, I read an article about emerging markets in Asia, so let me take a chance on that? Or you can't go anywhere these days without hearing about cryptocurrency and it going through the roof.
They are, absolutely. It's a lot of what has happened recently, right? And recently the headlines have been, hey, Bitcoin broke through 100,000, right? This huge sort of artificial but significant number. And there's been a lot of momentum there, right? The stocks that got hit the hardest during the interest rate hikes of 2022, be it the innovative stocks, a lot of technology stocks, those kind of companies, they are now the ones that are, you know, have done the best recently. And so, yeah, it's tempting when you see the higher risk things working out really well to say, hey, I think I probably want some more of that. The FOMO or the seeing the rewards that others are supposedly reaping typically shouldn't drive the investment decisions.
Well, I think we are, as humans, we do have that fear of missing out, and I want to be the guy who picked the right thing that is now taking off. At the same time, you talked about how we look at our 401ks and we look at the value of our houses, and yet I know from my conversations with people that there are people who go to bed every night and they're like, things are too good. Mm-hmm. My 401k is looking too good. I'm worried about, should this be when I'm pulling things out, the value of my house, should I be selling now because it'll never be this high again?
Right.
Even as things are going well in 2024, we seem to have a little bit of this gnawing fear in the back of our mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that sentiment, again, maybe alone should not drive investment decisions or big overhaul of your plan, but to be a contrarian and to kind of go against the sentiment has shown over time to work out much better than to sort of be a trend follower and to kind of hop on and, you know, whatever's done best most recently, right? To, you know, to sort of buy more of that. And then the things that have gone down in value in it or have not gained much or nearly as much to then get rid of those things, right? So to be the contrarian tends to work out better, but the timing of it is really hard. And by some measures, stocks or real estate are expensive and they're historically at their highest values. But you also have to remember that any good asset class is over time, it continues to march to new highs. So if you're always sort of, I guess, on the other end of it, waiting for that sort of dip and that, you know, pullback, that opportune time, it literally could, it may never hum again. And if it's the only reason that you're selling and there's not something else there is to sort of lock in a return, well, then where do you put the money? And what's the risk characteristics of that? And kind of what are you trying to get at? So I get it. And Hank, I'm more of that sentiment.
Yeah.
While everyone else is excited, I'm like, well, what's the next, you know, shoe to drop? Because there's a lot of optimism sort of priced in to the market as well. And a lot of it is sentiment. They say, I think Benjamin Graham, who is Warren Buffett's investment mentor, talked about the stock market in the short run is a voting machine, but in the long run, it's a weighing machine. Basically saying that the day-to-day and week-to-week, even month-to-month movements are largely driven by how good are people feeling, right? Investors, CEOs, economists, based on data they've just seen. But over time, it's the fundamentals that, you know, really shine through.
Right, right. Yeah. I can see that, that the stock market doesn't always seem to behave rationally sometimes. So listen, having said that, what then is a diversified portfolio in 2025? It used to be that we just talked about stocks and bonds, and to be diversified, maybe you've got some gold or something in there. Now, do we have Bitcoin or some of the other cryptocurrencies in there? Right. And do we have more of these a little bit riskier emerging stocks?
That's a great question. And there's been a lot of talk about that, even for the past, you know, really several years at this point, especially coming off of this really ultra low interest rate environment, the idea of the traditional 60-40 portfolio, which basically meant 60% in stocks and 40% in bonds. There are all these claims that the 60-40 is dead, or that doesn't meet the needs anymore. That's not the best way to approach it. Part of that, in large part, is the fact that bonds were yielding so little through the last decade, right? Up until just a couple years ago, we had a, 14-year basically lowest interest rates that we've ever experienced in our modern society. And it led to people picking up only a couple percent per year in yield. And then in 2022, if they held bonds, they lost value and kind of gave it back. The truth is people really over the last 5 or 10 years even haven't made a lot of money in bonds. Now, I'm going to defend bonds and say that I still think they have a meaningful place, and the risk reward profile at this point, I think, is more compelling than it was a few years ago, because we knew the yields automatically were low. Interest rates only have one place to go. So how did we, you know, approach that? Well, you have more short-term bonds, short-term government, money markets, things like that. But now that interest rates had come up and now they're starting to go down maybe a little more slowly through next year than what was expected, that can be a boost to bonds. So if they have a yield of 4.5-5%, but then we see a percent drop in interest rates, you could see several percent of price appreciation out of bonds, which we haven't seen in a couple decades. We kind of just saw them puttering along and not doing that well. So with that said, the stock and bond debate, or sort of what's the right mix, oftentimes what a lot of planners or investment advisors were doing, us included, was instead of saying, hey, that 40% of the portfolio, let's call it, in a moderate risk portfolio. And we'll talk about, Hank, like what risk level should you have and kind of what should determine that. But kind of middle of the road, instead of that 40% just being intermediate bonds, bond index or government bonds, instead you can have these slices of money market, short-term bonds. You can have these alternatives, like you said, which could be precious metals. It could be hedge strategies. It can be guaranteed insurance contracts, or, you know, private equity or debt. I mean, there's all these different types of alternatives. And I would lump cryptocurrency in there as well, because it's really doesn't display the characteristics of a currency, which is supposed to provide stability of value, which it certainly doesn't have, and transferability, like you can buy things. And crypto, you still can't buy a whole lot with it. You can trade it, you can gamble with it or do illicit activities, but you can't go buy, maybe you can still buy a Tesla with it, but you typically can't go buy any things with it. So, and it's not the basic definition of investment either, where typically there's a some type of a cash flow or a historical precedent to say, you know, here's what can be reasonably be expected over time. it's pretty darn speculative. So I was never one to say it's a total scam. I mean, there are plenty of coins and wallets and all these sort of lesser known ones that are absolutely scams. But like a Bitcoin or some of the other Ethereum and some of these other top ones, there's something to it. It's just so unknown what it can do and its characteristics, right? Whether it doubles next year or goes down 50%, they're both, to me, you know, equally as likely. And I don't really buy into that anybody has insight into where those price targets really are. They're kind of all over the place. But of course, Hank, for the past 3 or 4 years, when Bitcoin and all these others were way down, you didn't hear anything about it. I didn't really. Yeah. Like on social media, though, people that were touting it kind of got quiet. You didn't hear many news articles about it other than ones like, hey, I staked my whole life on this and it went down 70% and now, you know, my family disowned me.
Yeah.
There are a few of those, but you just kind of didn't hear much. And then it's really just these past few weeks on the momentum of lower inflation, growth, election results, potential for lower tax rates, deregulation is a big one that's kind of propelled them. But I guess kind of be careful with that.
Looking at that risk reward profile then, particularly on something like crypto, if you're 70, risk reward may be a little bit different than if you're 30. Because, you know, the closer that you are getting to, or you're already in retirement, and you say, okay, I'm going to bet it all on crypto instead of, you know, red or black at the casino to double my money. But if you're 30 and it's still kind of shaking out, you got a lot of time to kind of have your money sitting there. You're 70, just not as much.
Absolutely. Yeah. It really comes down to, Hank, like personally, right, there's in a box what asset class or investment looks good or bad relative to other options out there. But it really, we're individuals, we have goals and we have a finite amount of time on this earth. So they need to be matched up. Your investment portfolio should be matched up to your goals. And really specifically what that means is how long do you have before you're planning to use the money, or and what percentage of it may you need at what intervals of time, right? And if it's, well, I probably won't need most of it for like a couple decades or any of it, but I may need to just sort of have a little bit of liquidity, then great. Maybe you have an emergency fund and you can have a pretty aggressive, say, retirement portfolio that's mostly in stocks. And it could be, I think, to a small degree in other more speculative investments. Right. But yeah, if you need a lot of income or you're planning on making some gifts or buying a property, and if people are tempted to say, you know, but is there anything I can just kind of put it in for like a year or two where I could, you know, make a great return? Well, unfortunately, the things that you can make 10 or 20% in a year are also the things that can go down as sharply. Right. And so, yeah, I would be, you know, cautionary
there. Is there ever a time, Ryan, where it makes sense, and what would be this part of the mix, to just have cash, just cash on hand? I just have cash sitting in the bank.
Yeah, absolutely. I think these days, I mean, cash is always king in terms of it provides liquidity. It's easy to get at. There's no tax consequences to use your cash. That's great. It's preservation, though. To have it now, it makes sense, especially if you can capture good yields, which you still can, right? They've come down a little bit, but you can still get north of 4% for safe money. So the opportunity cost isn't as great as it would have been when cash was making sub 1%, right? Mm. But I think you also, you know, to your point about a 70-year-old with Bitcoin and speculative stocks, I have clients that are in their 70s that own Bitcoin and some speculative stocks. But the fact is that that portion of their money, they're probably never going to need. It's either like, oh, this is money I'm going to leave behind, so let's take a kind of a flyer on it, or they just are kind of gamifying it. And to them, it's almost just more fun to see what could happen. It won't make or break them. They're not going to be any, you know, their lifestyle won't be any different one way or another.
Yeah.
But I think if you can, in your mind, have that piece earmarked and classify it as such, and you want to have a trading account, or you're doing these options strategies, or you're wanting to invest in a private, you know, real estate deal or your friend's business, and you have no idea when you'll get your money back or what it's going to earn. Well, if you, in your mind, you're like, worst case scenario, if it all blows up and goes to zero, I'm still good and I have these other things, then great. But if you're gamifying more than an irrelevant portion of your long-term money, then you're also gambling with your financial stability. There was an article just this morning in the Wall Street Journal talking about how at Gamblers Anonymous meetings, there are more than ever, I didn't read the whole study, so I can't speak to it, but it was front page of the journal, so I think it was probably legit, but there are a higher percentage of people online trading accounts that are showing up and are like, this is a problem, right?
Because
it becomes, you can blur that line and start off as an investor, and then all of a sudden you become speculative and you're just gambling. So be
interesting.
Aware.
You recently just did, ClearPath Financial Partners just did an entire podcast about real estate. Where does that fit into what we're talking about today with our diversified portfolio?
Yeah, that was a great show. And Jim, as an investor, as someone who owns rental properties and is a real estate broker, a lot of it's on physical purchases of real estate. It's not passive, even though the income's qualified as passive income, there's some work involved, right, with improving properties and leasing them and caring for them and all of these things. In terms of most people, their biggest real estate holding has to be the residence, right? Or they may, through public markets, buy REITs, real estate investment trusts, which are commercial income producing properties that you can invest in, or even private placements, sort of non-traded real estate investments. Those can have a place, but like the physical version, at least those private deals, they tend to provide a good income like a rental property can, but be illiquid for periods of time. So you have to trade that off. And a lot of these alternative investments not only sometimes can come with a higher cost, but illiquidity is a factor as well.
Yeah, and Ryan, what do you hear from folks too? I mean, when they come in, so I used age as kind of a determining factor, but you can be a very cautious individual and your goals in your 20s may be different from somebody else who was in their 20s, and their goals may be, hey, I feel that I've got 50 years ahead of me or 40 years ahead of me, and this is what I want to do. And somebody else says, Ryan, I just want to make sure that everything that I'm earning stays safe and slow and steady. You know, when's the race? People have different goals.
Indeed, absolutely. And if I think that they can be safe and steady and still achieve their goals, then I'm in support of it. If I think that we don't work with many very young clients, but if it was a 40-year-old who was planning to work until 65 and insisted on putting everything into cash, I would try my best to educate them on why that will be a massive opportunity cost over time. So we help to reframe, and I want people to do what they are comfortable with, but also what's going to work for them. And I'd like ideally try to find that intersection. And sometimes they might have more of a risk appetite than I think they should have. But if we still have buffers in place and we have enough liquidity, we have that multi-year war chest of safe assets, high quality short-term bonds and money market, or they have lines of credit we can access, then as long as it's not to their detriment, express those preferences. But again, I think it comes down to the situation.
Well, and those goals too, I mean, and when do you really have to start planning on this, as you just mentioned. So a lot of people who are coming to you, they can see that retirement is in that 10-year window or 15 or whatever it may be, maybe even some people a little bit shorter. But how much time, because they're coming to you and it's like, and when I retire, I am going to need $100,000 a year, and I'm going to want to take these trips to Europe, and these are what my goals are. Mm-hmm. And you take a look at what you've done over the last 30 years and go, okay, how are you going to make that happen at this point in life? Then I could see maybe even you have to get a little riskier later in life.
Yeah, for sure. Or, there's, again, people's preferences and desires and goals, and then there's what's realistic. And sometimes people's think that they're in a much worse situation than they are, and we're encouraging them to not kill themselves at the job they hate, at 68 years old, because they can retire or take a job they just enjoy, even if they make a fraction of what they made. But other times people have these lofty expectations. And if I meet, say, a couple physicians and they're making combined $600,000 a year and they're 55, they say they want to retire at 60. And I see that they're only saving into their 401ks and even after tax are still spending like $25,000, $30,000 a month, but they only have $1 million saved. for most people, $1 million could be fantastic and enough, but at that spending rate, it's just not going to work. So to them, it's like, hey, you can either dial back that lifestyle or take more risk and or be willing to work longer if it doesn't play out, right? And sometimes they're like, what's more important? And some say, no, this lifestyle is more, you know, we don't want to make those cuts. And if we need to work an extra few years or 10 years, then we'll do it. So there's trade-offs, right? It's how do you make it work?
Ryan, a lot of information in this podcast of Clear Path Financial. Summarize for us here as we head towards the end, what that, again, diversified portfolio looks like to today, and just kind of where we're headed in 2025 after a pretty good year in 2024.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, I think it, for the most part, avoid the news media kind of channels. Like, I don't know. I mean, I get some, you know, interest out of it, but, you know, watching CNBC, MSNBC, the average person, you're not going to, I mean, even me, I listen to a show and I come away with like, I don't have any actionable wisdom from this, right? It was just a bunch of banter. Maybe it's interesting, but is that going to dictate what I recommend to clients differently because this guy in a suit had a really compelling argument for XYZ stock or asset class? No. So to make those sort of predictions is tough. I think, again, it's the economy is in pretty good shape. We're decently optimistic, but I also think it's to that point where some of that momentum, excitement, the wealth effect of those higher balance sheets could continue to spur this spending for several more months or longer. But when there tends to be some cracks, the market, as we saw the other day when the Dow lost, whatever, 1,300 points, the unwind tends to be quicker on the way down. So get positioned the way that's appropriate for your goals now and not have to second guess, because the best plan is one you can stick with and not have to fire sale out of, because that's the worst thing you can do.
Ryan Kittredge, best place to get in touch with you, with Molly, with the team at ClearPath Financial?
Go right to our website. You can Google us, clearpathfinancialpartners.com. Got some information there. Happy to jump on the phone. We get people that inquire and whether or not they're a good fit for our services or a good fit from them. We're still happy to answer questions, point people in the right direction. So happy to chat. Thanks, Hank.
Well, thank you. And there is another of our great podcasts with ClearPath Financial Partners. Remember, simply by going to clearpathfinancialpartners.com, you can find past episodes, whether it's on real estate, your investments, many different subjects over the course of the year. Make sure that you're using that, and it gives you a good way to be able to know who it is that you're dealing with as well, and get to know Ryan and everyone at clearpathfinancialpartners.com.